Greetings and welcome to Flanagan's Ecologic. I am your host, Ted Flanagan, and I'm joined in this episode by Matt Peterson. He's the president and chief executive officer of the Los Angeles Clean Tech Incubator. Hey, Matt, thanks so much for joining the show today. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, Ted. It's good to see you.
Yeah, it's good to see you too. All right, we're going to go all the way back, just a quickie in the beginning. Born and raised, I want to say Fresno.
Close. I was born in Sonora, California, in the foothills. My parents lived in Jamestown, and my dad had to drive up the old Priest Grade Road, which if you've been to Yosemite, you might have driven up it, and had to drive back down to take her to the hospital where I was born in Sonora. But grew up in Modesto, in the heart of the Central Valley.
And what? How do you think that has shaped you? I don't know. I'm from New York City. So I know how that shaped me, but how did it shape you coming from?
I'm a proud Californian. Yet growing up in the Central Valley of California is a little different. It's not like growing up in LA or San Francisco. It just has a different sensibility. I always liken it sort of more of a Midwestern sensibility, and a smaller town, of course. I mean, Modesto is now over 200,000 people, so it's no longer a small town, but that really just gave me a different sensibility, a sense of possibility, I guess, coming out of there, and collaboration and whatever. I'm sure a lot of those values come more from my parents than necessarily where I grew up, but that just, I think it just has a little different approach. And when I worked for later, jumping ahead for a second, when I worked in Iowa for Michael Dukakis, I felt like I could relate to people because they were somewhat similar to what I grew up with.
Yeah, that's very good. Chico State, right? Yeah. I was at Humboldt. You're at Chico.
Yeah. One of the reasons I went to Chico, I was supposed to go to San Diego State with my best friend. I was in junior college, and I went to what we call community college. I was at Modesto Junior College for a couple of years. And I'd come up like 6 credits short to matriculate to UC. So I applied to the CSUs, and I, at the last minute, decided to go check out Chico because but you know what? I don't know that San Diego is a place for me. I've heard there's unique student leadership opportunities at Chico. I've heard that they've had some amazing, political leaders come out of there. Not that he's aligned with my party, but Ed Rollins, Ronald Reagan's campaign manager was a student body president at Chico. And there were some other, figures politically that were more progressive that had come out of Chico. Obviously, Bob Mulholland lives there, and Jane Dolan's a graduate. But that's what drew me up there, and it's beautiful, and it's a party town, and all those. I had a great social life, but really, the student leadership experience and the education was phenomenal, and it's a beautiful, beautiful campus that has a creek running through it. Chico sits on an alluvial fan, and just a beautiful, beautiful place, special place to go.
That was political science and government. And then
I did poli sci, and then a double major, business and public administration. And little known fact, back to the student government days. So I was executive vice president of the school. It meant I chaired the student government. It was the government affairs and doled out the student club money and all that, and was the official policy lead and involved in our student businesses. We owned the student bookstore, the student union, and food service, as well as, of course, student government functions. And the president of the university, before I got there, had padlocked the student union and was basically suing student government to take control of the auxiliary revenue. And Chico State had the only campus specific legislation in history at the time, trying to prevent him from doing that. And when I was a student leader, we finished the negotiations, which were 3 years long. So, I mean, as a 21, 22 year old kid, learning how to negotiate with adversaries, it was quite an experience, but we got to successful settlement, which was pretty cool.
That is pretty cool. Don't mess with our student union.
Exactly.
Our space and our food. That's really interesting that they had the purview to.
And we were the only CSU campus that had control of those revenue sources.
I had never heard of that.
Yeah.
Then did you go directly to USC, or was there an interim stop?
I went home to Modesto after graduating in June of 1990. you know, I had eyes on big, you know, political races, having taken a year off from college to work for Dukakis across the country when I graduated. You know, well, when I came back and kind of operated at another level, having run and worked on a political campaign, you know, I could do a walk and chew gum at a speed a lot of my classmates, you know, weren't ready to do at that age. Coming out, I had high expectations after that presidential experience. Oh, I've got to run a big race. But my dad was running for local county superintendent of schools. Ooh. And my mom and dad wanted me to come back to Modesto to run the race. And I'm like, no, I've got, you know, I might go run a congressional race. I don't know. This is too small for me. And my mom, bless her heart, one day, you know, she's passed away, but she stomped her feet in the kitchen. I'll never forget. Put her hands on her hips and says, Matt, if you don't run your dad's race, you're never stepping foot in this house again. So then a friend of mine said, look, you know, close buddy of mine said, look, when are you ever going to get a chance like this again? And did it. And today, you know, we helped him, ran his campaign, helped him get elected. And still my proudest professional achievement. He went on to serve for 16 years as the county superintendent of schools of Stanislaus County and really did a phenomenal job. So I did that for, you know, a while, and then end up in LA in 92, where I ran a race for Tony Bielenson, who was congressman for a long time and had been redistricted, kind of got screwed in the Waxman-Berman machine a little bit. His district was more conservative than theirs, and out to the San Fernando Valley and out to Agoura Hills and Thousand Oaks. And, you know, he wouldn't poll, so we kind of flew blind through the campaign and helped him get elected. And then had been accepted at USC, so I deferred a semester to run that race. And so
is there a breed of people that likes to run races? I mean, or is that a step towards yourself running for office, or you had the
I think it was a step towards me running for office, but you know, I've since sort of mostly let that whole concept go and focus on other ways to affect change. I definitely breed, like you working and running campaigns at that level, the presidential level, the congressional level. We were a top 10 race. We were running against Tom McClintock. It was a big deal. So, you know, a lot of outside money was coming in. That's a grind, man. That's such a grind. But I learned so much. Yeah. The relationships, yeah. The skills, the phenomenal.
Sounds like a grind, but yeah, fantastic. So I'm going to fast forward a little bit. I think we're fast forwarding into the Global Green days.
Okay.
And I'll tell you that in 1988, I was in the Kremlin, heard Gorbachev give a speech all about forming this Global Green Cross. And I just thought it was the coolest thing ever. And then fast forward a few years, I meet you, and you're the head of Global Green, which is the U.S. branch of that vision. That must have been, how did you get into that? And I want to hear about your relationship with Gorbachev. He's somebody I just completely had met a couple times that have huge respect for.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I won't tell you the full long story, but my roommate at the time, a guy named Darius Anderson was raising money for the Democratic National Committee. And I was running this nonprofit called Americans for a Safe Future while I was in grad school. And, just coming to the end of my grad school, coming to the end of you know, where I wanted, while running that org, and wanted to look at new opportunities. And anyways, I got connected through my roommate Darius when he sent me a fax of a job announcement for president to, you know, that founder of Green Cross USA. And I'm like, I didn't really want to be somebody's assistant necessarily, but it was such an intriguing thing because it said Mikhail Gorbachev, Global Environmental Organization. And to me, that was my greatest passion. Combining a political leader who shaped history in a way that I think makes him one of the greatest figures of the 21st century in a way that most Americans may not appreciate, given his courage. But you know, that along with an environmental organization. I went up to meet this woman. She lived in this estate in Montecito. Our first meeting was canceled because of the 94 earthquake. Then we finally made it up there and really connected deeply. She had worked for Birch Bayh early on. Her name was Diane Meyer Simon. And Gorbachev had found her and asked her to start the organization in the U.S. And long story short, timing didn't work. 6 months later, she calls me out of the blue and says, "Hey, Matt Gorbachev's coming in 6 weeks. Can you help me put together a great trip for him in LA and launch this organization, Global Green, and maybe help me run it?" And really, you know, I then got to spend, of course, six frantic weeks of putting together a schedule and a series of interviews and all the things you would imagine. And in 1994, when Gorbachev was, there was still Gorby Mania, was an enormous, you know, honor, but a lot of work. And I went to New York and met him literally at the door of the Delta flight 30 or 31. I can't remember which number it was, but the nonstop from Moscow to JFK on Delta. And there he was. And he came out. It was like, the man's soul comes up through his deep brown eyes and just grabs you. And I was immediately captivated by this man. And of course, you know, taken by his, you know, sense of the love he has for the world, the love he has for his people, the love he has for the environment, and of course his conviction and courage. And so we, you know, first thing we did, we got to the hotel and they invited me into their hotel suite and said, "Look, where are we going for dinner, Matt?" And me and Raisa and Mikhail Gorbachev. And yeah, it was some extraordinary times. And I spent 19 years, you know, working with him, for him, as running what was then known as Global Green USA, the U.S. arm of Green Cross, he started.
Very cool. And the Global Green USA got into lots of things, but it seemed like one of your crowning activities, I guess, or most important, was rebuilding after New Orleans. Is that right?
Yeah, we had long looked at how can we help host, how do we help cities? So we'd been doing work with cities. We were working with affordable housing developers on how to green affordable housing. We were working with school districts on how to green new construction and existing schools. At the global level, we had, because of the notion of Green Cross, you know, which was a Red Cross for the environment at the time, which is probably that first speech you heard, there was an opportunity. We never manifested it as an organization, but how do we help in an environmental crisis? And we'd looked at different projects, but to me, this all came together with Hurricane Katrina, climate change, an environmental crisis, and sort of the man-made failure of a levee and all the devastation to the ecosystem from the oil and gas drilling. So all of it coming together and making the communities more vulnerable. And I, you know, sat in my home in Santa Monica, and as I was watching CNN and the horrors unfold, I'm like, okay, what? My nation's every level of government in my nation and our nation has failed, local, state, and federal, to help our own people and our own citizens. So what could I do? Well, could, you know, like many people did, host somebody in the home. We could make a donation. What more could I do? What could I adopt a nonprofit and help them come back to life? And then this crazy vision just came to me. It was like something greater than me was working through me. It was one of those moments where it was beyond just necessarily consciousness. It was an intention. And I'm not really a religious person, but it really felt like the force of the universe was working through me. Because there were so many obstacles as I put this vision together. So many people said, "No, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't go down there." Major environmental leaders said, when I said this vision of how can we rebuild New Orleans to be the greenest city in America, like, "Oh, you have they invited you? You can't go. You can't just show up." And then somebody else said, "You know, well, you and what army?" And you know, just work through the resistance when you know you're right. And we, within weeks, had somebody on the ground working for us. I had been down there a couple of times, raised money. We opened an office. We focused on the greening of the schools. We advised the city on green redevelopment. We had a major initiative to educate homeowners on how to rebuild more energy efficiently. And then we, I think the schools work actually was our biggest impact overall. It affected all new $2 billion in new school construction, all being built to LEED, silver, or better standards. And we did a few showcase skills as well. I got to bring down Lisa Jackson, head of EPA at the time, and toured one of the schools. But the biggest project in terms of press and stuff was we did a design competition in the Lower Ninth Ward with Brad Pitt that found a really an incredible set of architects out of New York City, APD Studio. But the real hero in all that, which led to five single family LEED Platinum homes and a beautiful community center being built, was this woman, Pam DeShiel, who was the Holy Cross Neighborhood Association president. And Holy Cross is the historic part of the Lower Ninth Ward, a lot of beautiful older homes there. And it was her vision that she'd put forth right after the storm for it to be the first carbon neutral neighborhood in America. And so when we reached out, it was like, oh, she'd already done the work. She'd already put the vision forward and made something magical possible in the end. And, proud of, bringing in 25, 30, 40 million, I can't remember the number of outside resources, but for our efforts wouldn't have come to New Orleans and invested in the community.
Yeah, that's a great, congratulations. Eric Garcetti, mayor of Los Angeles.
Yes, sir.
Asks you to become the city's first chief sustainability officer, which was huge. Talk about Garcetti and talk about that job.
Well, Eric and I had been friends for a while. And when he first got elected in 2002 as a council member, he would, I guess he was elected 2001. So he would host these monthly meetings with environmental leaders. And back then, there weren't a lot of us in LA. It's me, Mark Goldhill of Bay, Andy Lipkus of Tree People, and maybe 8 to 10 others. Now there's a lot of great environmental leaders here. Yeah. But we would get together, and I threw out a bill, like a legislation idea, like, let's introduce the first big city ordinance requiring new school, new municipal construction to be LEED silver or gold. Using LEED as a policy tool to drive change in the built environment. And he did it, and we got it done. And then I, next year gave him an award and with Gorbachev at one of our annual dinners, and he had to hang out with Gorbachev and Leo DiCaprio. Anyways, we became friends. It took him up to the Arctic Circle once for a fact-finding trip to see the effects of climate. And when he ran for mayor, I was like, sign me up, and we had talked about the need for a comprehensive sustainable city plan. And he held a 2-day hearing in city council chambers when he was president of the council. How do we bring a really comprehensive strategic approach to sustainability? And so when he got elected, he asked me to be the first chief sustainability officer. And I knew what the task was. I had worked in politics. So a lot of people saw me, oh, there's that guy, who runs Global Green. How's he going to survive City Hall? But they didn't know I had worked in politics and knew how to navigate, all that stuff that comes with it. So that was a great 4 years. We had a lot of fun, created the first comprehensive sustainable city plan. It's now the second version was known as Green Deal, LA Green New Deal. Put together the most aggressive water conservation initiative at the time. We reduced 20 per capita water use by 20% in record time, really being aggressive in education and rebates and incentives. Created climate mayors, and which was a group of U.S. mayors working on climate. It started with 33 mayors, but when Trump got elected, literally would wake up, got all these 70 cities on board, mayors on board, to say they would be all in on the Paris Climate Agreement and adopt it in their city if Trump pulled out. And so every morning I'd wake up and look at Trump's schedule to see if he was going to do the, the announcement that they're, pulling out of Paris. And it's June 1st, I think it was 2017. I'm about to head to China to represent the mayor, and Trump holds the press conference. We press send on our thing, get it out in the press. And it gave, it was a little of those things where it gave a little sense of hope for those that saw the news. 70 mayors, and then it grew to 170 within 24 hours. And within a few months, it was 400. And so that organization has grown out of that administration. And now I'm board chair of that group.
I remember feeling that hope that you're talking about. Yep. When I read about the mayors all saying, yeah, we're sticking with it. And then let's fast forward to Lacey then, Los Angeles Clean Tech Incubator, where you've been for how many years now?
I can't believe it's been 5.5. Yeah. Time flies.
And for those that don't know Lacey, what's the elevator pitch? What's the short?
Well, we're creating an inclusive green economy by unlocking innovation through startup, clean tech startups, and incubating them. We are transforming markets through catalytic partnerships and pilots, like our transportation electrification partnership, and then enhancing community through workforce training and increasing opportunities for underrepresented entrepreneurs in the green economy. So that three-pronged strategy is really a holistic green economic development strategy. A lot more to it, but that's the, you know, maybe the 20-floor elevator pitch, not the 5-floor.
Yeah, no. And then physically, you're in a facility. I can see the backdrop there, but you're in a facility with how many startup ventures or young companies that you're helping to scale?
Yeah. Well, back in the day before COVID, we'd had a lot of startups in the facility. Now there's, you know, 8 to 10. But because not everybody's using an office, as you know, anymore, even though it's an extraordinary office and campus we have. But the whole point of the building started, and the organization started under Mayor Villaraigosa. And Eric Garcetti was the only council member who really put financial support into it, by the way, even though it wasn't in his district, but he believed in it so much. The Villaraigosa administration had, you know, put the vision together and then built this campus that is extraordinary. $50 million into a 60,000 square foot campus on 1.3 acres, really an innovation campus that we are blessed to be the stewards of. And so we make the space available to priorities for our startups, and then for other like-minded, mission-aligned nonprofits and some for-profit companies to be there. And some government agencies, for that matter, Air Resources Board has an office there.
And then you actually have labs there.
We have an amazing set of labs, electronics lab, wet lab, or chemistry lab, cutting and welding, sewing and textiles, of course, additive manufacturing, and our machine shop. We just got some new CNC machinery that Snapchat donated that they had to get rid of when they downsized. And really just a wood shop, and like it's extraordinary. So startups can prototype any hardware that they really need there. And then we also do prototyping as a service with our great staff.
Yeah, I was so impressed by that. Talk about the electric aviation partnership, but how are you advancing that?
Our transportation electrification partnership was started in 2018. It really originated through conversations I had around the table at Lacey with Ron Nichols, who is president of Southern California Edison. He had actually reached out to me right before I left when I was leaving the mayor's office. And I was really pushing for, and Mayor Garcetti was leading on increasing the push for zero emissions trucks at the ports of LA and Long Beach. And so Ron and I sat down and said, hey, Matt, with you leaving the mayor's office, how can we continue this work? Like, this is really important what you're doing and the mayor's doing. And I said, let me think about it. And then Mary Nichols and I had a conversation about this, and we did a meeting together. And you know, this was a new direction for Lacey to go beyond the incubation. But the organization had been doing a lot of, you know, cluster-based approach and convenings around economic sectors, and was trying to bring some focus and really show the regional leadership that was made possible by the facility and the staff and me joining the organization. And we decided to create something that was really unprecedented in LA, which is a regional collaboration focused on transportation electrification. Now, LA is 88 cities within, you know, as well as the county, isn't really known for its great regional collaboration. Yes, it happens, but so we then chose the play that the Olympics in 2028 as the target, the date by which was also in 1984, at the time LA was considered where it came together the best as a region to reduce air pollution, reduce traffic, to host the games and welcome people from around the world. So Transportation Electrification Partnership set an ambitious target of 25% additional greenhouse gas emission and air pollution reductions to be achieved by 2028 over the 2018 baseline of Governor Brown's then executive order. Then we went about to set the targets of how many cars is that going to mean down the road. We needed 80% of all cars sold to be electric by 2028. So we're moving that direction. See if we can get there to 40% of the drayage trucks to be zero emissions to be 100% zero emissions by 2035, their ports are going to have to hit numbers close to that, if not more than that. So we're leaning in to bring the funding, the doing the pilots to see what works, to running legislation to figure out some of the missing pieces that are going to make the region come together in a way that we know is only possible here in LA.
That's fantastic. What percentage of your time goes into an initiative like that?
Well, when we founded it, of course, it started up, that was, 50-60% of the time. Yeah. Now it's, 10-20%, depending on the week.
So many fingers in so many pies. I was just curious about that. Yeah. It just sounds huge and all consuming, but hugely important. I'm glad we talked about the climate mayors. You've been on the MWD board.
Yeah.
You've been on the Center for Environmental Health board, the Sir Edmund Hillary Institute board. What is the Sir Edmund? What does that do?
Not everybody knows that Sir Edmund Hillary was a Kiwi. He's from New Zealand. Some people thought he was English. But for those that don't know, he was among the two of the first men to climb Mount Everest. Tenzing Norgay obviously was there with him, and he doesn't always deserve the credit. He doesn't get the credit he deserves as being the guide with Sir Ed. But they did something that never had been done before, which is get to the top of Everest by climbing what's now the Hillary Step, which was the hardest part to traverse after that arduous climb. And, I think it was in the 50s. And so he then became a social entrepreneur and helping the people of the Himalayas. So I got approached, somebody came through LA when I was running Global Green, and Ray Anderson, actually, if you remember Ray, who was CEO of Interface, suggested you should see Matt Peterson when you're in LA. And they were, at that time, like many people, they were coming to me because they thought I could help them get Leonardo DiCaprio or some celebrity. And in the end, they're like, oh, we actually really like you. We think it'd be great. We want to get you involved in this organization to identify mid-career leaders who are trying to climb that last bit of the Everest, the Hillary Step, who need some support to elevate their work, to lift them up. And I said, all right, sign me up. So I became their inaugural senior fellow, and I spent 8 years with the CEO, Mark Prain, identifying leaders. So we recognize people like Mike Brune or Tosa Satani, who ran Rainforest Watch or Rainforest Action Network. And then all these extraordinary leaders from around the world, and they all got to go to New Zealand, and then every 3 years, one of them would be eligible for $100,000 New Zealand for a project. The idea was to create something akin to the Nobel Prize with Kiwi New Zealand roots. Organization's still going, and now I've transitioned to a governing board member.
Oh, great. You do a lot. Now, how do you keep balance? You're looking healthy. You've got a lot of stuff going on. What do you say?
For me, I'm the kind of person without a lot of complexity and a lot of things going on. I don't thrive. I need the juggling act to keep me challenged and engaged. Now, the thing is to stay focused, of course, when you need to get something done, whatever, if it's volunteer or your day job. So it's just a reminder, to take time to stay, to be effective with so much going on. Anybody's got to, keep restored and healthy, whether it's going to the gym. I spent a weekend at Esalen, which I hadn't been to in 10 years recently. And I didn't look at my phone or electronic device for 48 hours, which I don't remember the last time that happened, but it was so nice. So to me, those are things. I meditate every morning, just the self-care.
Fantastic. Well, listen, thanks for sharing today.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Ted. This is a lot of fun.
Good catching up. Bye-bye. That's it. Thanks for listening to Flanagan's Ecologic. We'll see you next time.